Hello, everybody. Welcome to War of the Bay. My name is Kyle.
My name is Nick.
And I'm Anthony.
And yeah, guys, this is going to be a strange episode, to say the least.
It's going to be a very sad episode.
Yeah. So in honor of the Lightning being eliminated from the Eastern Conference Final, we're going to have a little game for you later in the podcast. And as we teased last week, we're going to count down, the three of us, our top five most crushing defeats in Tampa sports history. So you can hear that on the second half of the podcast.
Because we're sadists.
Because we hate ourselves, apparently.
I want to preface that it's more like personal crushing sports moments in history.
For me, I went straight Tampa.
Personal is Tampa.
Yeah, personal for me is Tampa. See. Yeah, you guys will see.
It's regardless.
Feels are going to be had. I'm going to be pissed. It's just not going to be good. But before we get to that, let's get to some housekeeping, or let's just get to a few things. So Creative Loafing is doing their Best of the Bay for 2016. And I tried to, like a couple years ago, I tried to get Word of the Bay mentioned in that, and I tried to get it voted. That's like back then they didn't have a podcast category. It was just like, you had to write it in like best local podcast, Word of the Bay. But now there's actually a field for best local podcast. So I'm gonna start a grassroots effort here to get us nominated as one of the best local podcasts.
This is officially us throwing our hat in the ring.
Yeah, for me, if we get nominated, even just to get nominated would be huge, because there's a lot of podcasts out there that have the support of like 102.5 The Bone and like other radio stations. So like, I don't expect to win against those guys, but just to at least be mentioned and nominated.
It'd be nice to compete.
That'd be nice. Yeah, it'd be nice to be
underdog
in
story.
Yeah. So if you want to vote for us, go to Creative Loafing's website and check that shit out. Or it's pinned onto my Twitter account, Kyle WOTB. I have it pinned there, so you can go and check it out there. And I'll provide a link in the show notes as well. If you're subscribed on iTunes, I'll put a link up there to vote for us, or nominate us, rather. So do that. And yeah, so that's without further ado. Anything else, guys? You guys, before we get into it, do you guys have anything you want to talk about outside of Tampa sports? Maybe the new Panthers jerseys?
They're an improvement.
Yeah, I don't hate them.
I would have gone with solid colors and not a split color.
Yeah.
But I don't have any issues with them, really. I think they're better than the old ones, and I think that's the whole point.
Yeah, Florida Bros. Good. Yep. Now you don't have such a cheap suit on.
There's a lot worse things. There's a lot of worse ways they could have gone with that. You know what I mean?
Of course, they could have gone.
They could have gone full Buccaneer and like, like authentic tiger scratchings were their numbers.
Or just made the fucking bigger, or made the logo bigger.
Yeah, I think
the biggest improvement. I'm sorry, Kyle.
I think maybe they're trying to like blaze a trail here and be unique with their jerseys. I don't know.
They definitely improved their logo, I think. I think their logo is a lot better.
Yeah.
And it's more unique to them.
I agree. When you go a little bit more simplified, I think that's, I like that look a lot better than the stylized like Panther, like wow, like
we did with ours. I mean, there wasn't much more to simplify. We were just a simple lightning bolt, and we did. And now look at it.
Well, I mean, our 2000 like 6-7-ish bolt was like fucking Willy Wan Nickelback lightning bolt, and you know,
yeah, the okay hockey years. Yeah,
it was like a fucking badass lightning bolt. Now it's like, okay, lightning bolt, very classy and understated. And I think
that was our teen angst years.
Yeah, it was like the okay hockey. Like we fucking made the Saw franchise.
It was almost like it had a piercing.
It's true, it had a piercing.
You know, you always see the more simple logos hung everywhere in a city. If you go to a city with a team that has like a complicated logo, you see a lot less of it on cars and stuff like that.
It's true. And I feel like the Panthers have gone from like, we're fucking Panthers, to like, we're Panthers. Like, check it out. Like, you know, this is our logo.
It's a little bit soccer.
That's what I was thinking. It seems a little MLS.
Florida FC up in the house.
Yes, but, Florida HC Hockey Club.
I like it. I think it's a good change, and I think it's a good time for them to change their uniform because they're on the upswing. And
good time to rebrand.
It is. Good. It's kind of like what the Lightning did.
Yeah, they're kind of stealing our thunder, you sons of bitches.
Fucking asshole.
Oh, starting off great. Well, all right.
I don't want to go to something not great.
Yeah, well, I don't have anything on the Bucks really. I was going to go on our Bucks and see if there's any topics to pick out. But
Hargraves is running with the second team, but that means literally nothing now.
Yeah, it means nothing.
Hargraves is like lining up, and I've heard he's lining up in nickel, in the nickel position. Let's see. I'm on our Bucks right now. Let's see if I can. John Lynch.
I thought it was pretty interesting today. They said that Dirk Koetters brought an energy to one Buck place that's been absent since Gruden left. I thought that was interesting. That doesn't really mean much.
It means odd
that he was there last year and it didn't have there? Or is it because he was under Lovey's tutelage?
Yeah, Lovey was in control. No cussing, you know? No cussing.
Oh, yeah.
We can curse. Yay. Yeah. Good. Maybe the other teams will be afraid of us because we
got to allow. You gotta allow men to be men.
No,
you can't
I
treat them like kids, and they're gonna play. They're gonna run through a wall for you. It's more likely they'll run through a wall for you if you just kind of let them be them.
Well, let's say this much: Tony Dungy didn't get a Super Bowl. John Gruden did.
Very true.
Oh man, you mentioned those two names, and I saw those two faces not
like flash.
I saw those two faces not. An hour ago watching highlights and I'm just I got so much hate right now in my heart that I need to get out.
Yeah, I agree with
you. You're gonna be able to let it out.
Yeah,
we'll get there.
Oh my god.
We all got hate in our heart right now.
Got so much hate in my heart. Okay.
You had hate in your heart, hold it in.
Hold it in for hold you know, in. For now.
Another half an hour.
Well, actually I'll have an opportunity right now to get a little bit of hate in my heart. So let's do something that we don't do very often. But we're going to do it early in the podcast, and we're going to ask the question, do the Rays suck? So let's do that now. All right. So when last we left our zeros,
wow.
They sucked, right?
Yeah, they left pretty bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah, they continue to leave bad taste in my mouth. It's not been good this year. This doesn't seem like it's going to be a great year for the Tampa Bay Rays.
Doesn't bode well already.
Yeah.
It seems like every time we get a bright spot, it's just taken away from us immediately.
It is. And there's small wins within these, but I mean, okay. I'm looking at, when's the last time we recorded? Friday. So Friday, Yankees loss, Saturday win, Sunday loss, Monday loss, Tuesday loss, win. Yeah. It's all bad. All bad. So
it's not good. It's not even kind of.
So if you want to take it game to game here, or let's see, who started on Friday? I can't recall. I know Odorizzi started on Sunday because he had the near perfect game.
That was immediately taken from him and destroyed.
Yeah. Taken from
thrown
him.
Thrown on the ash heap.
Destroyed. Archer was last Friday, Stephen Dolwip says. Okay, cool. So I'm glad. Yeah, he's in the chat, so he's going to set us straight. So Archer was on Friday. Archer didn't look sharp, obviously, and as he has been. And then a win on Saturday, 5-9. Our offense wakes up and is able to drive in a bunch of runs.
Woo.
And then Sunday rolls around.
I'm excited about even that. It's just hard to get excited about that.
I like that. I like watching it. It's not a bad thing to watch, I don't think, in my opinion. it's fun to watch us score runs. But what's even worse to watch is the way our starting pitching plays.
Yeah, it's pretty anemic out there.
Mm. Yeah. And I'm going to make a point here in a couple seconds, but I just want to kind of go through the week that was.
Mm-hmm.
So you got a 5-9 loss against the Yankees, and then a 2-1 loss where Jake Odorizzi takes a perfect game into the fifth and then proceeds to give up one pitch. I saw this coming from a mile away, I feel like. One pitch, and he gives up the game on a pitch, the home run. And if you can't beat a team by a single run, then what are you doing? You know, what the fuck are you doing? And
it's not a lot of baseball.
I had one fucking hit, and yeah. It was a 2-run home run.
Yeah,
to win the game.
If you say, what is that? Like, oh yeah, Jake Odorizzi is going to go. What did he go? 6, maybe 7. He's going to go 7 innings, one hit. Oh fuck yeah, here we go. That's a win all day. No, we lose 2-1.
Just that kind of fucking year.
And then the Royals.
That kind of fucking franchise.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to get into this in a second. So the Royals, we have a 3-game set with the Royals, and they proceed to just sweep us by way of steamrolling us. They score 6 or more in each game.
To be fair, we suck at that park.
We're terrible.
We lost like 19 of 20 there or something like that.
At Kaufman, yeah, we're terrible there. But, I mean, that's heebie-jeebie bullshit. We should be able to win there.
We're terrible right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here we are. I mean, the Rays, they're 22-29, which isn't awful. You know, that's bad, but it's like, okay.
It's still within reach.
If you can stay around 500 going into the All-Star break, that's okay. Like, that's not the worst. It's not good. It's not bad. You're just, and if you can maybe perform after July in the All-Star break, then, you know, maybe you can make a run. I think somebody pointed out to me on Twitter that at this time last year, the Blue Jays were in fourth place. So stranger things have happened.
Yeah, but we're not the Blue Jays.
We're not the Blue Jays. And I'm seeing a lot of things on Twitter right now about, have you guys heard the hashtag cash trash or
no,
trash, trash cash?
Well, they already calling for his head.
His head's being called for right now. Kevin Cash's head.
Lord. I know we suck, but really? Do you want that right now?
Dude, this is the world we live in. We live in Tampa where everybody's like, it's not working. Coach has got to go, man.
And you know that clip from Futurama with Fry? Fix it.
Yeah.
That's us. That's us as a fan base.
Yeah, this is everybody that blamed Derek Shelton for the past 3.5 years because they couldn't blame Madden because, oh, Madden's the baseball wizard. So it can't be him. It's got to be Derek Shelton. It certainly can't be the fact that we're just not a fucking talented team. Maybe that's the reason why. No, maybe. I don't know.
Like, no baseball manager in the history of time has ever had a World Series caliber season without talent.
You can apply the best hitting theory and practice, and when you apply it to borderline minor league hitters, you're going to get the same amount of output had you had a normal batting coach.
Yeah.
I just don't. I understand Derek Shelton's in pretty much looking inept right now as a base or as a hitting coach.
He's looking great right now as a hitting coach. We've hit the best year.
No. I'm talking about timely hitting. Like, we're terrible
with men in scoring position. The only time
that the reflection of a good timely hitting is hitting when you're supposed to.
Okay, but how can you blame the hitting coach for that?
Because
he's not the one up there at the plate.
Exactly. Like, you can't teach how to be clutch. You can't teach clutch.
Yeah, you can have the perfect swing. You can have Ken fucking Griffey Jr. swing. But if you don't have that gene, I guess you could call it, that clutch gene to say, hey, this is a big moment, and to come through in those moments, it doesn't fucking matter. You're going to pop up, or you're going to strike out 9 times out of 10.
Yep.
And the time you do get a hit with a guy on second and third, it's probably not going to fucking matter because we're going to be down like 10-0. So some guys have it and some guys don't. And for the longest time, we've had guys that just don't have it. There's one guy in our lineup that has clutch, and it's Longoria, and that's probably fucking it.
He has Tampa clutch.
Yeah. That's he Tampa walks good. Up on the Padres.
Yeah.
In the fucking middle of June. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got to.
We also have a bunch of. We have a couple players on our team that are apparently, you know, just uninterested in playing competitive baseball.
Absolutely. And it makes me wonder when people talk about firing Cash because our starting pitchers can't make it more than five innings or because we can't seem to find a hit for the life of us. And they say, well, I'll fire Cash. That's not Kevin Cash's fault, man. He's going to make the lineup and he's going to put those guys out there and they're going to do what they're going to do. You know, where Kevin Cash comes into play is the decisions that he makes late in the game and in the bullpen, you know, pitch hitting a guy. That's the kind of shit that you look at a manager for, but not if your starting pitching is going out there and giving up runs in the first and second. If fucking Chris Archer is going out there and giving up runs in the first and second inning, that's not what your staff ace is supposed to do.
Four earned runs in the first two innings. Like,
yeah,
you're not going to win a lot of games starting off like that, especially from your ace.
He's supposed to be your number one.
The bullpen is bad, yes, but you know what doesn't help is when your starters can't go five innings.
Exactly.
Or five innings without giving
it
up.
It all fucking snowballs, man. It all snowballs. That's the game of baseball. If you're not hitting, then your pitching's going to suffer because they don't feel comfortable giving up anything. If you're not pitching, then your hitting feels like they got to score 20 runs every game. And if your bullpen sucks, then no one feels comfortable ever with any lead. It's a snowball effect.
So to your point, Anthony, like this philosophy that we've picked up this year with we're putting a paramount on hitting. You know, obviously we're going to be a big hitting team. We're going to sacrifice our defense at the expense of defense. You bring in a Brad Miller, you bring in a Logan Morrison, and you bring in a
Steve Pierce.
And you know we'll take a hit on defense, but we're going to be a better hitting team. And the philosophy for the last however many years has been pitching and defense. It's been Joe Maddon going out there. Oh yeah, pitching and defense. That's our fucking game. We're going to go out there and we're going to pitch well. We're going to play defense well. So I think when you pick up these guys that don't necessarily play defense well, your pitching is going to suffer. I think that's ultimately what I think this is. Like our starting pitching was so good over the years because we were able to play defense behind them. We were able to get the amazing ground balls, turn the double plays, that kind of shit. I think that's why you're seeing our team struggle, and more specifically, that's why you're seeing the starting pitching struggles because they don't have the defense behind them that they used to.
No, they don't have that safety net.
Let me throw this out there. Compare our infield in 2008 to our infield now. Our infield in 2008 was what? Longoria, Bartlett, Zobrist.
Iwamura.
Or Iwamura.
Yeah, no, it was Aki. Yeah, and Pena at first. All those guys are very capable defensive players. Now you got Longoria, Brad Miller, and whoever the fuck's going to be at second until Forsyth is back. It could be Motter and Logan Morrison at first.
Yeah, Steven Dole Whip's in the chat. He's more or less agreeing with me. He says the Rays changed their philosophy from focusing on defense and pitching to more emphasis on hitting, and now you're seeing the effects of it. He says Brandon Guyer dropped the ball, which led to an inside-the-park home run tonight. So,
oh, lovely.
Yeah, that's the thing. People are wondering why our starters can't get deep into games is because we can't play defense behind them like we used to. We used to make – we were able to make – guys like Andy Sonnenstein and Edwin Jackson and Eric Bedard look good because we were able to play defense behind them and shore up some of the balls that on other teams would poke through the infield. You know, that was
go ahead, Nick. I'm sorry.
I was going to say our defense was, I never remember starting pitching on this team, but we started off by just being so solid defensively that you had to have a perfect game against us to beat us.
I think it's a mistake that we went with hitting over defense, and we still have the starting pitching there. We have guys like Blake Snell in the minors. Like it's still there. And you know, if you had a good defense behind them, maybe they can go deeper into games, and you get the runs that you get. You win a couple of 1-0 games, and you know, you move on with your life. But now we've put this paramount on hitting, and you see games like the games against the Royals, where we have games that are 2-6 and 5-10 and 3-6 and you know, that kind of shit, where we're out hitting the Yankees 5-9, but you know, the next night we can barely get a hit because you know, our lineup is so inconsistent.
The Royals won a fucking World Series off of pitching, defense, and base running and timely hitting. That's how they won that World Series.
Gee, where have I heard that before?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's overstuck it with them.
Well, you know what? We didn't always have the timely hitting part down. But
not even close.
Not even close.
We don't have the fucking payroll.
It goes to show that a team that is so good at the fundamentals that it's just second nature to them is going to win a lot more games than a team that's just trying to outslug you.
Yep. Fundies. Fundies, my friend. Like, I remember a lot more double plays back in the day than I do now. Like, it seems like a rare thing anymore to turn a double play, when back in the day, it's like that happened almost every inning.
Yeah, and Grape Welch in the chat pointing out the Royals didn't even have that great of starting pitching. They just had a lockdown bullpen. If they got to the seventh with a lead, you were done.
Yeah,
you're done.
Yeah, I recall a Rays bullpen the same way, when you had Chad Bradford and Troy Percival and fucking J.P. Howell and Grant Balfour, and there you go.
Yep, just hand it over, guys.
Yep. Whoop, there you go.
2010 for us. Thanks. Rafael Soriano?
No, Soriano. Soriano came a couple of years later.
Well, I was talking about 2010. I said.
Oh yes, you are correct. You are correct.
Yep. Yeah, that was a good 7-8-9-2, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, that was a playoff year, I believe. Let me check.
No, yeah, wait.
2000.
No, don't check. Don't check. Don't check.
The list. The list.
Yeah, the list. Don't check.
Oh God.
Bring it back in, Kyle.
Bring it back in. We're talking about the current race.
All right. So
they haven't disappointed us yet. Not that bad.
I remain optimistic about the Rays, and I'm still gonna have fun watching them. They're still able to hit well, and I think the starting pitching can wake up. I just think that this whole philosophy of paramounting hitting over defense, it's not gonna work out.
Nope. Not in the long run, at least.
Yeah,
you'll have stretches where they win, like 4 or 5, and they score a bunch of runs, but that doesn't hold up.
Yeah, agreed. So, guys, I have some other Rays news for you, off the field news.
Ooh. What's that?
Well, apparently the Tampa Bay Rays met with the Hillsborough County City Council about some possible stadium locations,
and
a lot of them are very, very interesting. And I kind of want to go over them with you guys.
Oh, please do.
Let's do it.
So I'll start from bottom to top of what I like. So they didn't give them all away. They talked about a lot of locations. They didn't give them all away. But some of the ones that they talked about were the Florida State Fairgrounds, which has been tossed about before. Uh-huh. The Tampa
Bay. Can I stop you right there?
Yeah, stop me right there. Go ahead.
If they build one there, what happens to the fair? Do they just keep using like the parking lot for it? I wonder.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of open area there, but I think that's an awful idea. You're basically faced with the same situation that you are.
Yeah, just like, north.
Yeah, I don't like that location at all.
Terrible location.
I really don't.
Okay, yeah. And second to that is the Tampa Greyhound track, which is basically more, you know, you're trying to get the more Temple Terrace, Lutz.
That thing is an eyesore, man.
It's an eyesore, and it's a weird location. I feel like that's another that you don't want to be there.
That's better than the fairgrounds, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I pass it every time I come in from Gainesville when I'm heading to Tampa, so that'd be, you know, at least it'd be like right off the interstate. People would see it when they drive in.
It's true, but still, that's the same with Tropicana Field. You pass by Tropicana Field when you go to Sarasota Bradenton.
Yeah, but nobody goes to Sarasota Bradenton.
Or Volk.
There's a skyway between there.
But Key West or, you know, anywhere South Florida.
Scary ass bridge.
You got to pass it eventually.
Yeah, but it's just like nobody lives right between there and the bridge, though.
I'm telling you, man, I don't think people live around that area either.
But people from out of state just think it's a big crock pot.
Yeah, that's true.
It is a big crock pot.
But yeah. here's three areas that piqued my interest that are very attractive areas, and all three of these I would love to see a stadium here. So the first one, which is the one that Steve Dumang likes to talk about all the time, is Ybor City. Can I
say something about
that? Go ahead, yeah.
I think that would be a great place to put it, just for the fact that would show a lot of culture in Tampa. Like, the area around it would be very cultured. It wouldn't just be like a flat development land.
Agreed.
But at the same time, that's a lot of hoops you're going to have to jump through to build something like that there.
It's a lot of riffraff you're going to have to get out of there, too. Like, that's
a lot of historical things around there, too.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's not in Ybor City proper. It's more by the IKEA. It's by the actual basin.
Oh.
Yeah. If you were to look at Tampa on a map, you obviously have the Amalie Arena. You have... Mm-hmm. I'm zooming into it now. You, for those that are familiar with the area, at least, you have the IKEA, and then kind of southwest from that, there is a channel for like big shipping and shipping containers and stuff. There's like a lot of free open land there, and it's owned by some kind of shipping corporation that can be used. So that's what they're talking about. So like. It's north of the Florida Aquarium and the Channelside Bay Plaza and Amalie Arena. It's north of all that. And, you know, it's kind of way back in that man-made harbor right by the Selma Expressway.
Does that make it any more accessible than Tropicana?
I think
that's kind of an eye. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
When you look at I-4, I-75, and the Selma Expressway right there, that's pretty accessible and it's right near all that. Right.
No.
Here's my only problem with that
expressway. Oh, sorry.
No, you were talking first, but my only problem with that spot is that harbor is not the best thing to look at.
No, it's pretty ugly. Really,
it's pretty ugly.
Well, it's very industrial. That's not the image we give off. We don't want to come off like Pittsburgh. We want to come off more like San Diego.
I mean, you know, we could always put like smokestacks on the stadium. Like we could go with the theming if we really want to.
Right. And the so I'm
being serious.
I mean,
smokes like industrial fucking like barges that like
every time we hit a home run, it's like a train. It's like that like train horn sound.
I mean, it pretty much is now.
Yeah, very true.
So the second to last.
Oh God, I forgot there's more.
Yeah, there's two more, and they get better as they go. So, like, the second to last one is the Jefferson High School location. So, for those that don't know, Jefferson High School is just off I-275 when you get off Howard Franklin. It's just past West Shore Plaza. So, you know, just when you pass the mall, it's on your left-hand side if you're traveling into Tampa. That's one of the areas that they talked about building it. And that's also a pretty good area. That's close to St. Pete. That's close to...
What else is there now?
Whoa. They're not going to knock down the school, are they?
I think so. I mean, I think that...
that's not going to... Dude, that would be rough. That would be real rough to do because you'd have to... Jefferson would have to find a new location to put their school at.
The only reason... I haven't looked into it, so I don't know if they're already looking to move. I would assume that if they're looking at that location that Jefferson High School is going to move and they're looking for tenants for that location, for that area.
I mean, I would love that spot. I think that's a great spot.
Yeah.
But that's good. That's also a bunch of hoops you're going to have to jump through.
Yeah, it is. But the most attractive spot and the spot that I think would be amazing is the Tampa Heights spot. So again, for those that don't know, let's just travel a little further down I-275 to the Hillsborough River. So right in the area of the University of Tampa, the Straz Center, where I-275 crosses the Hillsborough River.
The other side of the shadow of the Bank of America building, yeah. where we're opposite Amalie Arena.
No, no, not opposite, but to the left of 275, there's a bunch of fucking open, it's just open field area, and it's right where the,
I know exactly where you're
talking
about.
Right where the Hillsborough River bends. It's right by I-275, and you can almost make a diagonal line. If you were to put the Rays Stadium there, you can almost make a diagonal line from Raymond James Stadium to the Rays Stadium to Amalie Arena, and that would be the perfect spot, like as far as parking logistics, as far as location from St. Pete, like St. Pete's already used to traveling that distance to go to Lightning and Bucks games. I think right there, that's your sweet spot right there. That Tampa.
I'd like to point out too, like when you look at pictures of people at Lightning games, a lot, their backdrop is always the city.
Yep.
Because it's a beautiful thing to look at night. And also, UT's campus is also fucking gorgeous.
It is.
So
it is. It's very Russia.
That'd be a beautiful area to put a stadium.
And that area right there, it's right on the river. So you would imagine like that the stadium would face the river. And when I look at it on a map, it's literally just open field. There's nothing there. There's nothing fucking there. There's a couple streets. You know, you have a river. You have Blake High School. It's like, oh my God, that would be amazing.
Do either of you play NHL 2016, the new one?
No.
Yeah, I have.
Okay.
I have.
So the area, oddly enough, Kyle's talking about is the helicopter shoot in for the pregame. If you don't, for the Lightning game, that's where he's talking about putting it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It goes right over it.
That'd be great. That'd be absolutely perfect.
Yeah, you're just out of downtown. You're not in Vinnickville exactly, but you know, you have there's still areas to park residential and commercial and otherwise. You have the infrastructure there already for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Oh my God. I would love if it went to that place.
And it basically be a triangle of Ray J, Amalie, and the new stadium.
Yeah, like I said, you could.
Because Ray J's not that far from that either.
Nope, you can draw almost a diagonal line from, you know, it'd be like a little bit of a curve from Ray J to Tropicana to Amalie. And Amalie and the Ray Stadium would be, you know, a few blocks apart. You know, or a handful of blocks, I'd say a little bit.
It would boost downtown's popularity by quite a bit.
Oh God, I would love it. I would love it.
The only problem is, even though baseball and hockey don't overlap that much, they'd have to plan around that because you cannot have both those games on the same day.
Yeah, and Jared asked, "Can the Rays build bars and shops?" You wouldn't need to. Downtown's right there. Like it's walking distance. It would be walking distance from the stadium.
I mean, there'd definitely be more
bars there.
There'd be more Rays theming, for sure.
Yeah,
obviously. But yeah, you don't have to do much with in terms of what's around the stadium already.
It's just on the other side of 275 from Amalie. So I don't think it's that much of a stretch to build a couple bars there on that main, you know, that main drive on, you know, whatever.
Score update, Longoria homered. We're up 4-3.
Hey.
Clutch.
Clutch.
Yeah, there's a Tampa clutch coming
Tampa
through.
Clutch, baby.
Okay. Tampa clutch is a two-run homer in the fifth. That's what Tampa clutch is.
To take a one-run lead with the worst bullpen in baseball.
Yep.
Let's do it.
Oh, shit. So what do we say, guys? Did the race suck this week?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Jesus, you're goddamn it at being an embarrassment to professional baseball, being like that.
Oh, snap. Loot Crate. It's June, you guys, and this month, Loot Crate's doing Dystopia. Looks like RoboCop, Terminator 2, The Matrix, and BioShock Infinite, and Fallout 4. Man, this looks awesome. I literally just got the copy. I'm reading it off my phone. So what is Loot Crate? Loot Crate is a monthly box subscription service. They'll send you 6 to 8 items each month of licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific time to subscribe and receive that month's Loot Crate, and after that, it's over. Make sure you head on over to lootcrate.com/shark and enter the promo code SHARK. You can save yourself $3 off any new subscription. And yeah, this one looks really awesome. I wish I would have got this one too. Now that I think about it, maybe I need to sign up for Loot Crate because this looks like all this stuff looks right up my alley. I got the Quest one, man. I don't really like Vikings or, I guess I like Harry Potter, and they gave me a David Bowie shirt. I love Terminator 2, one of the best James Cameron movies ever. The Matrix, I love. a standalone. There weren't the sequels, not so much. Bioshock Infinite, still haven't played, but goddamn, I love Bioshock as a franchise. And Fallout, who doesn't love Fallout? This month's box looks awesome. Make sure you go to lootcrate.com/shark, enter the promo code shark. You can get your hands on this loot crate. You have another, what is it, the second? So you have 17 days to go ahead and get that box and subscribe to that. So once again, lootcrate.com/shark, promo code shark. Get you some cool gear. Get your hands on some sweet-ass Bioshock Infinite merch. And, I don't know, tell them Kyle sent you. There's probably not a box where you could tell them that Kyle sent you, but you could probably just say it out loud when you place your order, and then I'll be satisfied, and Loot Crate will be satisfied. So, lootcrate.com/shark, promo code shark. Okay, we're back, and it's time to feel sad.
Yay, sad.
God damn it. Here we go.
Everybody got your tissues? Okay, good.
You know, I sat here and this list took me a good week to compile. I just started looking up past seasons for every team and kind of coming up with what you know, I came up with a total of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 games. And I had to pick 5 from those 12. And all 12 of those made me feel so salty. A mountain of salt.
I had more sadness than salt.
I had a nice mixture of being angry and then just being so, so depressed.
So this is what we're going to do, gentlemen. We're going to go through our list individually, 5-1. Then we are going to go through our listeners' lists because they have also submitted. We have at least 2 lists that have been submitted to us. And then we're going to go through our honorable mentions.
Got it.
So that's how this is going to go. So without further ado, we are leading it off with Anthony. Your number 5 most crushing defeat.
So let me set the scene for you.
Oh, please do.
It's 2013. The Tampa Bay Lightning are in a year where not much is expected of them. It's John Cooper's first full year as coach. The team is really young, but we've called up most of the kids, and it's time to get this thing on the right track again. Steven Stamkos is tied for the league lead in points or scoring with Sidney Crosby. We skate into Boston, Massachusetts on November 11, 2013. And in late in the second period, Steven Stamkos gets tied up with Dougie Hamilton, goes down and smacks his leg into the post.
Mm. I remember that.
I'm expecting him to get up, and I'm like, he's fine, whatever. You know, it happens, shit happens. He gets, but he doesn't get up. He tries to get up, but he immediately falls, and I'm going, oh no, what? And they show the replay, and I immediately knew that he broke his leg. They bring out the stretcher. And at this point, I'm just in a puddle of tears in my room, just watching the TV like, no, this can't be happening. Like, no, this is his year. And it's the Olympics that year. He's going to be like one of the main people on Team Canada. Everything is going well for him. And then boom, broken leg, done. And he came back, I think, later that year, but he wasn't the same.
No, he wasn't.
For a while there. And so that's my first heartbreaking moment. That's more of a moment than a game, but I couldn't stomach that. I still think about it to this day. And I have flashbacks every time someone hits the post.
Wow.
Oh, no. That's not a good sign for the Lightning and John Cooper, but he was back checking on Hamilton and had good position on him.
Now the Lightning players looking on anxiously from the bench.
Let's
have a look.
He's clutching the trainer.
Watch this come out there. You see it right here.
It's never good when they embrace the trainer when they get there.
Oh, on top of that, we lost to Boston that game too.
Look, lost his skate edge and came in, and it looked like.
Brother.
He fractured his right tibia, to be specific.
Yeah.
Good lord.
That's a tough one, man.
That's a good number 5.
That's my leadoff. So,
Nick,
gentlemen.
Oh my God, what do we expect from the rest?
It's going to get worse from here.
It's going to get much worse.
Why are we doing this?
Because I had a dumb idea and you guys said it was good.
God damn it.
All right. It's your turn, Nick.
All right. My number five. I don't have to set the scene too much, guys, because it just happened. And I know this might be shocking to you, but my number five is May 26, 2016. Game 7, Eastern Conference Finals, Tampa Bay Lightning versus the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Oh, fresh wound.
Fresh wound.
This one is going to go down for a while with me because not only, I mean, we've heard the story of how I found out we won with 6 minutes left in the game, I presumed. We've already lost. And to have it robbed and taken away from me so quickly kind of, in an opposite way, makes it last longer because I didn't even have the end of the game to hope for. I had it taken away from me. And in a game in which we, or not just a game, but in a series in which we overcame obstacle after obstacle after obstacle to make it to make it to this point, and to have game seven just be, I mean, Rust scored two goals. He doesn't do that.
And we were right there. We were right,
you know,
there.
Vasilevsky has arguably the worst goal he's given up in a playoffs and arguably one of the better playoff games he's ever played. And to watch a team that was just being built as the storybook ending and just to have it crash right in front of you, even though it just happened not too long ago, this one's going to bother me for a long time.
Isn't that?
I'm in complete agreement. It's as much as I feel like I'm moving past it, it's going to be a while before it leaves my like psyche. Every time I see a penguin now, I'm going to have flashbacks, even just like a real life penguin.
Anthony goes to SeaWorld. No!
Oh, fuck, man. We had a 3-2 lead in the game six.
I mean, that's the devastating part is the 3-2 lead. I mean,
coming home.
I'm coming home.
3-2 lead.
Yep.
You had all the confidence in the world. But I mean, look
you
at
had all
look
the
at,
momentum in the world.
Look at Pittsburgh in 2011 and the same thing. They had a 3-2 lead and they fucking blew it, or a 3-1 lead rather, and then they blew it against the Tampa Bay Lightning,
which is kind of funny.
And then the cherry on top of that, we couldn't pull off game seven even with the return of our fucking captain.
Nope
we had everything.
Who could have wrote a better story?
Everybody was back outside of our goaltender.
Yep.
And arguably the backup was playing to a level that I'm not even sure Bishop could have.
Yeah. Yeah. And he still couldn't get it done.
Still couldn't
Tampa
get it
Sports.
Done. Yeah. Tampa Sports. Well,
you know what we did? That was a Tampa Bay good effort.
All right. I think we need to let Kyle step into the batter's box here.
I alluded to something here, and that the same thing happened to a similar thing happened to us in 2011. The Pittsburgh Penguins actually went up 3-1 on us. We came back and won the next three games against them, and holy shit, we swept the Washington Capitals 4-0. Go fuck yourselves, Capitals. And with Dwayne Rolison, of all people, in goal, in net, like the wily vet. And we go into Boston, into TD Garden. Game 7, Eastern Conference Final. And we just needed to win that one game. We'd be back in the Stanley Cup for the first time. For the first time since that fabled cup run in 2003. And Boston outlasts us for the game and wins it.
Tim fucking Thomas.
Tim fucking Thomas. And anytime a Boston team wins against your team, anytime you see those fans happy, that is just the worst fucking feeling, ever. And this really felt like one of the last times we were ever going to get to see the likes of Marty St. Louis and Vinny LeCavalier, Teddy Purcell, and, you know, those guys to win a game together. And it was heartbreak. I hate losing to Boston. This game, barely beat out another game for me. You know, there, it'll be in my honorable mentions, but it's another time another Tampa team lost to a Boston team in the playoffs. But I had to go with this one because it was later on in the playoffs. It was an Eastern Conference Final, Game 7. All we needed to do is win one game. We couldn't even score a goal. They shut us the fuck out in TD Garden.
There's a play, if you don't mind, from that game. Steve Downey has a wide open net, and Tim Thomas just kind of sticks his, like, he's expecting to get scored on. He just kind of puts his stick up. And if Downey puts it literally anywhere else, it's a goal, and he hits it right against his stick, and it stays out.
It wasn't even like a deflection. He hit it flush, and yep. It deadened the
and
puck.
It just fell. It just fell to the ground.
God damn it. It's not even
fuck my fucking life, man.
Yeah. Sixers didn't even want it to happen.
If that's Boston, that stick fucking breaks and ends up in the back of the net. But no, it just the puck just dies. God damn it. There you go.
Fucking Doc. God damn it, Doc.
When he says that, oh, and it wouldn't go.
Yep.
That's and it's against your team. That's
pretty much
it.
It's just my got hope. Robbed.
Yeah.
There they go.
That fuck. Oh, the stick was just. Oh.
He just stuck it out there. It was a last resort save.
It just wasn't meant to be.
It was a flail. They got to go to the Stanley Cup on a flail.
We could have beat that fucking Vancouver team, too.
Yeah. Oh,
it's
there was about two. There was two other teams in the Eastern Conference that year that could have beat the Vancouver team.
Yep.
Anyhow, all right. That's my number five.
So I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go a little off the board here. It's this one. You're probably not gonna have any sympathy for me on this one, but it's. Yep. It's got a place in my heart because I was there. Exactly. 2008. This year did not end in heartbreak for the Florida Gators. They won a national championship in Miami over the Oklahoma Sooners. But this day ended in heartbreak for me. It was the fourth game of the season. We were playing the Ole Miss fucking Rebels, who were at that time were pretty much a doormat in the SEC. We got Tim Tebow. We got Percy Harvin. We got a loaded team. Everyone's expecting us to go undefeated and run the whole fucking table, which is a thing that Florida has never done. Even though they have three national championships, we've never gone undefeated. Nope, wow. We've always had one loss. Fourth and one, late in the fourth quarter. We're down 31-30 by one fucking point. And everyone in the stadium knows that Tebow is going to go up the middle like Tebow does. That's the call. It's the play call. The whole fucking stadium knew it. And he gets stuffed. And Ole Miss gets the ball back. And the clock runs out. And the entire stadium sits there in stunned silence. I remember it so clearly. I was there. I watched the whole thing happen. He dominated that game. Let me read out. Just a little bit of a stat for you. We had 443 total yards, so they're 325, and we had 24 first downs, so they're 10, and they won by one fucking point.
Wow, that sounds like a Bucks game.
Yeah.
It was the biggest gut punch in a live sporting event in the history of my life. I've never been more gut punched than that day. Of course, it ended triumphantly that year, so it's not really.
Yeah, really.
Seeing it live. Definitely adds to the effect.
If it wasn't live, this wouldn't have made my list, but I was there and I saw it happen. So oof. There you go. That's my outside of the box pick.
I'm trying to look for the
please don't.
The call, and I can't find it. I mean, I can let's see, what is this?
During a week when top
Nope, that's not it. Yeah, I wish I could remember that game, but I can't because you guys won the fucking national championships. Who cares? But I understand. No, I understand where you're coming from, Anthony. I do understand where you're coming from because
that ruined the perfect season, man.
It ruined the perfect season. Maybe at the time it made you feel like you didn't belong. Like it gave you this feeling like, fuck, maybe we aren't that good. And maybe
sorry. I'm going to say this as a fan of just a lowlier team that doesn't win as many national championships. Well, I shouldn't say that because we just did. Anywho, I don't want to hear it. You won this season.
No,
you
fuck won the off. Fuck off, man. I was there. Listen, I didn't want to. I wanted to go with outside the box pick. It's kind of hard because of the Gators have won a lot since I was a kid, but they're my second favorite team out of all the teams I root for. I couldn't just leave them out.
Fair enough. I'll give you that.
I know it's a fucking bitch pick because we didn't.
No, it's not a bitch pick. Not at all. Not at all.
It's a bitch pick.
Ooh.
Wow, Kyle.
I'm kidding. Of course I'm kidding. No, I understand it because you'll find out why in one of my picks.
Okay.
Oh. Ooh.
I understand.
We have 11 more of these. Jesus, we're going to be so depressed by the end of this episode.
All right, Nick, you're number 4.
All right. My number 4 occurred on January 7th, 2006. And this game was an important playoff game, yes, but so much in the annals of time.
Oh boy.
This is the wild card playoff game against Washington. And we lost that game 17-10.
Yes, we did.
And let me tell you exactly what my memory of this game was. I got threatened to be fired or work that night. So at the time I was working at Cracker Barrel. I know, awesome. But I didn't have any view of this game. Not one bit. I didn't get to see or hear anything. I was forced to sneak back into the cook's quarters and beg one of them to put on the game on the radio so I could listen to it. And I just caught the end of the game that we lost. That's the first thing I got to hear of it was the Bucks just lost. And this is just so disappointing on so many levels because not only did I not get to enjoy any part of the good game or any good part of the game, however, I didn't see there was much of them. My only interaction with the game was final score 17-10. Redskins take it, and Gibbs goes on, and you know, son of a bitch. Like, why couldn't you just let me not hear it?
Here's what I will forever remember about this game.
Sims deep. Touchdown. Edale Shepard lost the ball when he hit the ground. Are you kidding? Perfect throw.
He dropped the ball. Chris Sims dropped a fucking dime into Edel Shepard's hands. He dropped a dime. The goddamn thing was there. All he had to do was catch the fucking ball. God damn it, this game. God damn it.
You know how many Chris Sims dimes? I could probably count them on my fucking hand.
Yeah.
That he dropped in his career with the Bucks. Okay. Yeah.
And
he throws one in a big moment and the guy just... Pfft.
Oh, I'll never forget that game. I was so pissed. How do you drop that fucking ball? Edel Shepard, are you kidding me? He dropped it. And I'm looking at the replay now, and it's pissing me off, and I fucking hate this game. Because I see the ball. Like, I'm thinking maybe when I look at the replay, maybe I'll see he makes a clean catch and the ref's fucked up. But no, he dropped the fucking pass. God damn it.
It never gets better, man. It never gets any better.
This is 2005 was the best our defense had played since our Super Bowl season. We had the best defense that year by far, man. Derrick Brooks was playing out of his fucking mind, and you know it looked like another one of those. Like we're gonna make it on an okay offense, but our defense is just unbeatable this year. And God damn it, man! Fucking Edel Shepard.
Shepherd. A perfect throw.
Oh, you can hear the cannons going off in the background.
Incomplete. Shepherd couldn't
catch it.
Incomplete.
Are you
they were
kidding?
They were firing Michael Jordan heads. Those cannons firing Michael Jordan heads.
Oh, God. That's what it would have been today, yeah.
Yeah.
Or it would have been like the picture of the football would have been like a Michael Jordan head, like hitting the ground.
God fucking damn.
God. Yeah, dude. That this game, Nick, is definitely on my list.
Oh.
It is on my list of 12. Or not on my list of 5, but it made my top 12.
Oh, good. Okay. I was about to say.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Next one.
Number four.
My number four occurred with the Buccaneers as well in week number 7. This particular week occurred in October the 20th in 2002. Now, you may be saying, Kyle, that's the year that we went to the Super Bowl. And I'll say, yeah, it is the year that we went to the Super Bowl.
Oh, but mine was a bitch pick. Oh, fuck.
No, it wasn't. That's why I understand your pick, because this game against the Philadelphia Eagles, the Eagles had beat us twice in consecutive years to eliminate us from the playoffs. And the Bucs looked so good this year that I was like, man, this could be the year. This could be the year that we make the Super Bowl. Like, this could be it. And here come the Eagles. So it's like, okay, if we beat these guys, then we belong. This is truly it. I mean, it's manifest destiny. Like, we're going to make the Super Bowl. We're going to be the team I always imagined we'd be. And week 7 rolls around, and it just doesn't go down like that, man. Brad Johnson gets hurt. Donovan McNabb throws touchdowns all over us to Freddie Mitchell, and we don't beat the Eagles. The Eagles beat us again. The fucking Eagles beat us again. And I remember, like, the only reason this is my number 4 is because I remember I went home. I cried after this loss. I went home, like, I was at my dad's house. I watched the game. I was very upset. Didn't say anything. Was just like, was fuming. Got home and went to my room, went to my bed and cried on my fucking pillow. I was so upset. Like, how can we not beat the fucking Eagles after all this time? Like, we have John Gruden, our offense and our defense look so good. Why can't we beat them? And it was such a disappointing loss to me. Like, we should have beat them.
I remember this day.
I remember very clearly, actually. That was also the day that Sapp got poked in the eye, wasn't it?
Yeah, Sapp got poked in the eye. Brad Johnson got injured. And it was like, fuck, okay, there goes our awesome team that we just had the first few games. All right, cool. We're fucked. Awesome.
There was something about the Eagles and the Bucks back then that you just that just doesn't exist today.
No.
When we play the Eagles, there was something about those two teams and how much I hated Philly more than I hated any other city ever during that time.
They owned us.
They fucking owned us. And every fucking game, it just seemed like we just never beat them.
Nope.
And that was the nail in the coffin for me until later, of course, that we were never going to beat them. If we ran into them, we were going to lose.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed. Yeah, and that's why that NFC Championship was so amazing, because we ended up beating them. But, yeah, that's my number 4. Bucks 10, Eagles 20.
It's already back to me.
It's already back to you.
Yep.
So I want to take you to the best Rays year ever, in my opinion, 2008. I don't think that's much of an opinion. I think that's a fact.
That's a fact. But, fact of life.
That's a fact.
Yep. Game 5. The ALCS in Boston. It's the top of the 7th, and we take a 7-0 lead over the Boston Red Sox.
Oh, I have a story
in Boston, and the crowd goes silent. And my dad, I remember my dad yelling "Good night" when we took that 7. Like, that was it. The fucking Pena and Longo hit back-to-back homers in that game. Everything's going great, and then the bottom of the 7th rolls around. And the Red Sox put 4 on the board, and things get a little tight, but we're thinking, all right, well, we got a good bullpen. Everything's okay. You know, top of the eighth, we don't do nothing. Top of the bottom of the eighth, they score another three. And now it's 7-6. No, it's 7-7. Excuse me. It's 7-7. And we're and everyone, and of course, now we're all sweating.
Wait, hold on, Anthony. Can I stop you right there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I want to play something for you.
Let's do it.
Swing and a drive, deep right field. If it's fair, it is way out of here. Seventh, and we all of a sudden have a ball game again.
Yeah. Anyways, continue.
Yep. So bottom of the ninth rolls around. They hit a single. Gabe Gross comes in to score, wins the game. And we just to put this into perspective, it was the second biggest comeback in postseason history.
Not just Red Sox history, but postseason?
Postseason history. Largest since game four of the 1929 World Series.
Good night.
And the largest forever for a team on the brink of elimination.
Ugh.
Yeah, I fucking cried that night. I cried my eyes out. It felt like the Red Sox magic that they've had for so many fucking years was just going to come right back and bite us in the ass.
Yep.
And beat us.
Yep.
Oh, and then on top of that, they won game six. So we really thought it was over, but obviously we went on to win that series, but still.
Nick, Nicholas.
Yeah.
You and yes. I were together for that game.
Yes, we were.
We were at Ferg's and I was like so confident in the fucking team. Like I mean, you guys know me by this point. I was drinking and I was loud and I was being,
where are you?
I was being myself and being a loud Rays fan. And a woman comes up to me in Ferg's and says, "Hey, you got to lead the crowd and take me out to the ball game." Like I'm like, okay, it's game five, world or ALCS. We're gonna win this fucker. We're gonna sweep these assholes. Okay, here we go. Take me out to and so I proceed to lead Ferg's and take me out to the ball game, and then TBS shows clips of the Buccaneers and the Lightning defeating their opponents in their conference championships and advancing to their world championships. And I'm like, oh God, it's happening tonight. Lightning fucking Tampa Bay love fest. And no.
Womp womp.
No.
That was a hard letdown that night.
Hard.
That was one of the worst losses I've ever watched ever, and especially because it's always fucking Boston. Always, yeah. With their bullshit voodoo magic that happens to just surround that city for fucking ever. We'll never leave.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Fuck that.
All these big cities. So,
if we didn't win that series, I probably wouldn't be talking to you today.
Oh God,
that's wow,
beautiful.
I'm kidding, but yeah.
Nicholas, you're number three.
Honestly, when you started talking, Anthony, you got me scared because I thought you were going to go do the exact same thing I was going to do, but I went a little later in the year, and this is the only game or moment or whatever you want to call it on my list that takes place over 2 days. This is game five of the 2008 World Series, Tampa Bay versus Philadelphia.
No.
October 27th and October 29th.
The slow and painful death of game five.
The agony of having to watch your team who, I mean, at that point in time, we were clinging to momentum and inning to inning. All we wanted was a game six. We were just trying really, really hard to get to game six. But Philadelphia herself decided to just rain on our parade, quite literally. Took the game out of our hands, took the momentum that we had out of our hands, postponed it 2 days.
It was called a swinging strike by home plate umpire Jeff Kellogg.
Why?
Nothing in two.
Deal with it. Deal with it.
Phillies are world champions.
Oh, and Joe Buck and his stupid fucking face.
And forehead.
Oh, Phillies are world champions. Fuck you!
We lost that game 4-3.
Oh, and did we?
Yeah. Did oh, was that is that's hold on, let me
that
check
was
my
the final score just to let you know.
Fucking check my paperwork here. God fucking damn it. God fucking damn it. I hate this. Why did we do this?
We're not done yet. We got two more. You got three more.
Yeah, Kyle, you've got three more to go.
Yeah, sure.
Speaking of that, Kyle.
Kyle.
You're going to make me do it. My number three, I'm going back to football for this one.
Mm.
Going back to football. And this was a tough one for me to pick. And I think it's, if you're a Tampa sports fan, it's pretty easy to guess what my number one and two are. But my number three happened in week five of 2003, October 6th, Monday Night Football. Tampa Bay Buccaneers versus the Indianapolis Colts. The return of Tony Dungy to Raymond James Stadium. And, you know, what do you want to do to your old coach that returns? You want to kick his ass, man. You want to kick his ass. And I'm watching this game. I watched this game before before the podcast on YouTube. And I'm thinking, how the fuck did we lose this game? It is unbelievable. Fucking Rondé Barber picks Peyton Manning off with 5 minutes and 15 seconds left to go in the game. He picks him off, returns it for a touchdown, and the score becomes 35-14. Okay? The game is over. For all intents and purposes, the game is fucking over. That is it. Right?
Pretty sure that's where all intents and purposes came into your life. This game is where that saying came in.
Yeah, that game is fucking over at that point, okay? Like, it's 5 minutes left in the game. Rondé Barber picks you off, returns it for a touchdown. The Bucs are up 35-14. You fucking pack it up and you go home. You go home. And I look at this game now to this day and I'm like, how the fuck did we lose this game? How did we lose this game? This was 1 year removed from the Super Bowl. We had world champions still pasted in our fucking end zone, okay? We had Warren Sapp, John Lynch, Simeon Rice, Shelton Quarles, Derek Brooks. We had all of those guys on our fucking defense still, and we let the Colts come back on us in 5 minutes and win that fucking game on Monday Night Football. Guys, this wasn't just an ordinary loss, because I'll contend that the Buccaneers have never been the same after this loss. That's when we lost the fucking swagger, man. That's what we lost. I mean, that's when it all went downhill. It was all downhill from this loss.
You know, I tend to agree. It never felt the same after that loss.
No, we were on top of the world. We were the world fucking champions. Nobody could beat us at this point. Okay. That was, you know, we were the end all beat all. We were set up to be a dynasty, and after this loss, like, you know, it was all downhill. Sure, we made the playoffs a couple times, but we filtered out or we fizzled out. We had a couple winning seasons, but they never went anywhere. Yeah, man, I feel like I blame this loss. I blame a lot of what we are today, right now, at this point. With the Raheem Morrises and the Lovie Smiths and the Greg Schiano's of the world. I blame all of that on this. I think you can trace it all back to this Monday Night Football game right here on October 6, 2003.
So you're saying that was the little snowball?
That the beginning of the end.
Yep, that was the little snowball, that little tiny loss. I mean, that, it was a huge loss at the time, but that it was the beginning of the end for that. Like we never realized our full potential because of that game.
Nope, that was it.
Yeah,
that was the dagger, mm-hmm. as Gene Dekaroff would say.
Yep, honorable mentions. I mentioned another game that year. Which was week two, which is where the Panthers beat us in overtime after blocking a extra point when Brad Johnson.
That was my number one. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, when Brad Johnson tied it up with Keenan McCardell, they blocked an extra point and won it. I think that was strike two, and then strike three was fucking the Colts knocking us out, man. That game, I feel like the Bucs were never the same after that game.
That was horrible, man.
Yeah, and that's why we are where we are today, where I just have no faith in them after that game. That's just like I can trace it all back to that one game.
There's no trust after that. That's basically your parents holding you and saying you're going to be fine, and then everything catching fire.
Yep, exactly. So that's my number three.
Huh. I guess back to me now.
Oh, yeah.
After that was like a sermon. So I'm going back to baseball, actually.
Oh, brother. Here we go.
Really?
October 12th, 2010. Cliff Lee in the Texas Rangers coming back into the Trop, trying to close the series, game five of the ALDS. I was sitting down the left field line as I watched the Rangers take a 1-0 lead early in the first, and then watch us come back and tie in the third. And then after that, it was just curtains. I fucking hate Cliff Lee more than anybody should hate somebody. He dominated us in that series. And that team in 2010 felt like it had what it took to win a World Series and to erase that pain from 2008. And they couldn't do it. And Cliff Lee fucking dominated us and threw a complete game, one run, six hit. Knock us out of the playoffs in a year where it looked like we had a chance. I watched it happen down the left field line. I watched it fucking happen. I watched him strike out and get every batter. And I still can't shake that. I still can't.
Kyle, weren't we at that game?
No, we were not. I was at the game in 2011 where the Rangers beat us, but not that game.
Oh, okay. I was about to say those are blurring together.
Not to mention he did that twice in the series. In game one, it was the same score, 5-1.
That's all I was about to say was this was the second really, really good game he had against us that series.
Dude, Texas kicks our ass. It's unbelievable.
Ron Washington just has our number.
We couldn't hit against him. We couldn't hit anything against him. And the reason this is so high on my list is because I was there for it and I watched the whole thing. And the Trop was rocking that night too. And by the time it got to around the eighth, ninth inning, it was fucking empty. And it was one of the saddest experiences of my life.
He's now played more than 92 games in the season over the past 5 years. Swing and a miss, and Cliff Lee gets out of a major jam in the first inning. Both teams threatened, but neither score. Done with one, no score.
Bases loaded to Rocco Baldelli in the bottom of the first. Cliff Lee gets him swinging. Yep. Top five crushing defeats. Fuck!
That's going to be the soundbite.
Fucking hate it. Hate this shit.
Okay. All right, Nick.
Number two.
Like Kyle alluded to earlier, obviously it's clear. I mean, for at least for one of these, is going to be very clear why it's in the top two. And I'm actually going to, hold myself back a little from talking about this because I know it's going to be a very important talking point for somebody else. So let's take us to January 23rd, 2000, the NFC Championship game.
Oh, man.
Tampa Bay versus St. Louis. And this game was the most defensive-dominated performance I think I've ever laid eyes on. Maybe I'm being biased because it was my team, but we looked so dominant, and our offense was just not giving us any little bit of help. This game was so frustrating because of what we got to hold that team. That was a special Rams team. That wasn't just some other team. That was a very special Rams team.
Greatest show on turf.
And we held them to 11 points. 11 points. Kurt Warner was grounded. And we, yeah. So, like I said before, I don't want to dig too deep into this because we're going to be rehashing this. So that was my number two, the NFC Championship game from 2000.
I wish I could. I can't find the Burnham Annual catch here on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the Rams were the greatest show on turf. They were the shit back then, and for our defense to keep him in check for so long, and for Kurt Warner to fucking throw a pass to Ricky Prohl in the fourth quarter to put him ahead, and then for us to lose it on such a bullshit call is, quite frankly, a travesty.
You know, and it goes back.
So, I'm sorry,
No, I didn't know you were getting ready to play that.
Well, I was playing a NFL Network thing. No, I was hoping that it would give us the call.
But it goes back to what you said in your last game, is that could have also been the start of a dynasty if we had gotten past the Rams that day.
Yeah.
Let's see if this we could have had two championships going to that Monday night game, and it might have stung a little less.
Exactly. Nope. The greatest show on. Let's see if it'll give us the... Give us the call here.
I mean, they were a video game, not a football team.
Play action by Warner. Dumps the ball. Picked up! Intercepted to the 20-yard line!
Keep being physical. We're messing with the rhythm.
The tempo was set by Tampa's defense. It was 6-5.
We looked so good.
Late,
we looked so amazing.
The Rams finally reached the end zone.
Ricky Prohl.
The Bucs answered with a drive of their own. Only to see it halted by our number 5 controversial call.
Bert Emanuel made a crouching catch.
Oh, God damn it.
I'm not sure what's going on. It looks like they might be reviewing something.
When the initial movement came.
God, that was a fucking catch all day. I can't do this. I can't do this game right now. Can we stop? Can we stop doing this list?
Your turn, bud.
It's my turn?
Yeah, it's your turn, man.
Fuck. So we're at number two then, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Well, you're number two, yeah.
Well, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on my number two. Because it's already been talked about once before.
Hmm.
We have some overlap. So I'm gonna come out and say what my number two is. And... fucking
swinging strike by home plate umpire Jeff Kellogg.
It's gonna let this play out.
Two. Phillies are world champions.
Fuck you, Joe Buck. Fuck the Phillies. Fuck all these assholes.
The city itself wanted us to lose.
Oh, man.
I had to hear that twice in one night.
Dude, I watched the whole ninth earlier today.
Why?
Because I just had to watch it.
He really likes to punish himself.
Deanna Navarro was on base. We pinch ran Fernando Perez. Fernando Perez went to second. We had a man on second. All we had to do was just get a base hit and tie the fucking game, man. That's all we needed to do. And we just couldn't do it. And it's heartbreaking. And that's the closest the Rays have ever gotten to winning anything. And it's the reason I'm a fan today. Sure.
But Kyle, we have wild card banners.
No. Fuck those wild card banners. Fuck all that shit. Fuck all that. Fuck all that bullshit. I don't care. I don't give a I don't care, man. Win the goddamn World Series and then talk to me. Wild card banners. God damn it. That game was such horseshit. Anyways, that's my number two. We don't have to spend a lot of time on this.
I love it. I'm not going to spend much time on it, but God damn it.
God damn it.
That's my number two. So, Yeah. Go the fuck ahead. What? Yeah. Let's rip some band-aids off right now. Cause we're going to number one.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
If you couldn't predict this, then you don't know me well enough. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on it, but
I think it's all of our number ones.
Game six in Chicago.
Yeah.
Yep. Game six in front of Chicago. Everybody's like, oh my God, Chicago deserves this. It's their time. They're going to get to win one in front of their home crowd. Even though it was their third one in 6 years. You know, it's just their time,
it's
man.
Time. Yeah.
It's time for the Chicago Blackhawks to win the Stanley Cup.
And again.
Again. They took it from us, man. They
Nick? Nick?
You're fucking...
Yeah.
Are you in agreement with this one?
Oh, yeah. This is my number one.
This is your number one. This is my number one, too. So without further ado...
No.
Not on that. They've waited a long time for this to be in hold. Slipped in front and Crawford another block. Five to go. For the third time in 6 years, the Blackhawks are Stanley Cup champions.
For the first time in how many... For the first time in what years?
No.
For the third time in 6 years.
Fuck you! Yeah, whatever.
That Lightning team felt like destiny, man. It felt like fucking destiny. We come back against Detroit. We've wiped the floor with Montreal. We beat New York in New York. It's like, fuck the Blackhawks. They've got two cups already. We're going to fucking win this thing. And nope.
Kyle, you and I used a Chicago Blackhawks jersey as a doormat for
we did
for months after that game.
Here's why I don't mind losing to Pittsburgh, especially it was just the Eastern Conference Final, and I feel like I've seen that enough as a sports fan to okay, you know, fine, go win your fucking whatever. But it's the Blackhawks. They're like the perennial fucking big dick championships year to year.
Yeah, they're
like,
the hockey Yankees.
Yeah, and all their fucking bandwagon fans. And I know that's a stupid term to use, bandwagon fans, but I'm salty right now, so I'm going to use it anyways. Fuck you guys.
I still have yet. I'm never going to recover from that one. That's one that's never going to leave me. And especially now that we know where that roster didn't win one. That one hurts even more than it used
yeah,
to.
That one hurts.
That and we had a 2-1 lead in that series too. People forget.
Because you think at least Brad Richards and Modine and LeCavalier and Marty, they got their cup.
They got a ring.
These guys never did.
Nope. And the fucking 3-6 Blackhawks, they got theirs, or they got their third one.
Yeah.
Like, that makes it sting even fucking more. Like, if it was somebody else, if it was, like, the San Jose Sharks or some shit, like, whatever, it would still hurt, but at least,
yeah,
like...
good for them, yeah.
Good for them, but, like, fuck you, man! Like, fuck that! Like, why can't we get one? Like,
Why not us?
Yeah.
Well, before that season, I actually happened to like the Blackhawks. Like, before anything started, I had, like, cool, if the Blackhawks win, awesome. That's my Western team, so on and so forth, da-da-da.
I had no issues with them.
And as the playoffs progressed, I realized that the real likelihood that we were going to have to face them if we were going to get a cup. And then it became quite apparent in the Western Conference Finals when they beat... Wait, hold
Anaheim.
On. I thought it was the Ducks.
Yeah. They blew. They also blew a series lead to them.
Blew the barn doors off of Anaheim, and Anaheim was the fucking great team that year.
No, Anaheim had a fucking lead on them, in 3-2 series lead. All they had to do was win one more, and yep. We would have played the Ducks, and we probably would have beat the Ducks. To be quite honest with you,
we could have beat the Ducks
because they didn't have the experience either.
And even if we didn't, it probably would have probably been a less
Crawford.
Crawford, man.
Crawford had his magic saves and his. Like seeing eye stops when we, I mean, how many posts did we hit that game? Stamkos chipped the paint off of one. It's just,
All right. Well, let's go through some of our listeners' top fives. Yes. This is from Andrew Welch, Great Welch in the chat. You can follow him at Andrew S. Welch on Twitter. His number five game is 529-13. Wings blow a 3-1 series lead to Chicago and lose in overtime on a goal to Brent Seabrook in game 7.
We should mention that Andrew's a Detroit guy.
He's a Detroit guy. Number four, yeah. September 1st, 2007. Number two, Michigan loses to Division II Appalachian State.
Yeah, that would have been on my list too, man.
Yeah, that would have been on my list too. Dexter Jackson running the fucking. And we and then the Bucks draft him, so I guess I should be laughing. number three, he says the 2008 Lions. He says no particular game, just that they went 0-16, so the entire season.
honorable mention, we could have done the 72 Bucks.
Yes, well, that's true.
I was alive for that. So
number two, October 24th, 2012, Pablo Sandoval launches a 3-run homer in game 1 against Detroit. No words for that. And then finally, his number one is October 13th, 2013, game 2, Detroit at Boston. Detroit's best team with one of the best pitching staffs ever assembled blows a 5-1 lead because Joaquin Benoit throws a meatball changeup to David Ortiz, who hits a. A grand slam and then eighth to tie. Yeah, dude.
Of course he did.
Yeah, of course he does. That's fucking David Ortiz. Yeah. Fuck that guy.
That's fucking Boston. Fucking.
Yep.
Horseshoe motherfucker.
All right, let's see. I got another one here. Let's go with Stephen Dolewips. His number five was May 30th, 2013. Will Myers collides with Jennings. Jennings didn't call off Will. Johnny Gomes is the winning run. Yeah, that's a pretty, pretty solid one. August 14th, 2012, my first ever Rays game at Safeco Field and watching Fernando Rodney throw a ball to Carlos Pena and the ball going wide of Pena. Let's see. Wait, he gave me two different lists.
Just read one.
I'm going with his personal one.
Yeah, do the personal one.
Number three, August 15th, 2012, Felix Hernandez pitches a perfect game against the Rays in Seattle. Yeah, that was fucking terrible. He says, I was the only Rays fan in attendance, my second Rays game ever. Me and Fernando Rodney kept shouting perfect game, and I thought I'd curse the team. His number two is game six. Stanley Cup Finals, Bolts losing to Chicago, and his number one is Game 4 ALDS, the Boston Red Sox beating the Rays. Yeah, that was pretty tough. That was almost going to make mine. And then finally, we have one more. Jer Bear, 81787. Yeah, Jer Bear 81787. His top five crushing Tampa sports losses. Number five, Game 10. Game 10.
Wow.
2010, Game 5, ALDS against the Rangers. His number four, 2006 NFL wild card. Nick, that was yours. His number three was the 2008 World Series Game 5. His number two was the 2011 Eastern Conference Final against Boston. And finally, his number one was the 1999... NFC Championship against the St. Louis Rams. So, there you go.
I remember losing faith in referees then.
Yeah. Nick, one of my honorable mentions actually was the semifinals where you and I painted our faces against the New Jersey Devils and we lost. And I remember how apathetic the fans were. I was like, come on, that we're against the fucking playoffs.
Yeah, like no, by the end of the second period, people were like on their phones. Yeah. Nobody cared.
Nobody gave a shit. Nick and I painted our faces for nothing. For
we got to go on the ice. We got to go on the ice.
We did get to go on the ice. Shit.
I've got an honorable mention.
What's that?
It didn't make my list because we won the series, but Simone Gagné's OT winner in Game 6 in 2004 in Philly.
I hate Philly. Yes, yep. That one sucked.
Oh, Simone Gagné! I still remember the call. It was
yeah, because that's how I remember his name. I was like, God, his name sounds stupid.
Yeah, that one hurt bad. Hurt real bad.
Ugh. Honorable mentions.
Wait,
gentlemen.
Wait. Oh,
we have more? Okay.
Wait, hold on.
Johnson will bring it up. Johnson the flip, trying to get it into the corner, went off Kavina's stick. Jeremy Roenick and Kavina collide. Roenick still with it. Gets it away to Gagné. Gagné for Roenick, lets it go. Primo. Primo draws it, side of the net. Roenick shot. Oh, it's
sports are dumb. I hate sports.
Hey, at least we won that series.
I don't even want to fucking watch sports anymore. God damn it.
So we'll see you guys same time next week.
Yeah, same time next week. Why not?
Same time next week where we will do something else. That's not as sad.
The happy will come back.
We'll bring some joy back to your lives.
All right, guys, as we said in the beginning of the podcast, check out my Twitter feed, KyleWOTB. I've pinned a tweet that is the Creative Loafing Best Podcast nomination for Tampa Bay. So make sure you nominate us for that. All you have to do is enter your email and enter Ward the Bay for Best Podcast. It takes a couple of seconds, and if you do that, it could help us out. So I would appreciate that. If you like our show, rate us and review us on iTunes, and be kind to us there. Of course, check out sharkdropper.com for all of the rest of the podcasts that Nick and I do. We do quite a few. So if you like to hear our voices and you don't just want to hear us talk about sports, you can go to sharkdropper.com, check out all the podcasts there. And that is it.
That was brutal. I'm not gonna lie.
That was emotionally taxing. I can't do this anymore.
I'm glad we did it.
I'm glad
we aired out some. It made for a good episode, but Jesus Christ, never
I also didn't mean to leave this out until now, but I will not be on the next episode. I'm actually going to be in Vancouver.
Fuck yourself.
Well, we will replace you with someone that's not in Vancouver.
You'll get replaced. Yeah, maybe we'll get somebody else on.
Yep. Wait, never mind. We'll discuss that.
We'll discuss it later.
Look forward to that.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Any bold predictions before we get out of here? Rays sweep whoever they play next. There you go. Here's your bold prediction.
There will be more heartbreak in our future. Bold prediction.
Hey, Tampa.
Bold. I don't know. Let's go something crazy, non-sports related with the Tampa Bay. Something sets back the big screen going up in Raymond James Stadium.
Oh, God. You went dark. Okay, fine.
Jesus Christ, dude. What, someone going to die or something?
Yeah,
no. What the fuck?
Permits or something. I don't
Permits.
Know.
ISIS, like, fucking goes in there.
My number one is actually the scoreboards not being finished for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, people die.
It is a travesty. Yeah. It's a travesty.
Jesus Christ. Okay. Well, let's get out of here. Next week, I promise you, will be a more uplifting show. We'll have a game to play, and hopefully...
No, we won't, because Nick's not going to be here.
Fuck! Well,
guys, get a game.
We'll have something. We'll get our shit together. Somehow
it'll be the Monopoly episode. We'll be playing a full game of Monopoly and we're okay.
We'll play guess the plot for fucking some movie. I don't know.
Oh, I don't like that. Steven says it's gonna be next week's gonna be his last one for a while.
Oh shit. Well, we're off Mixler now, so we gotta go. So that was Word of the Bay for this week. I'm Kyle.
I'm Nick.
And I'm sad.
And I'm sad as well.
I'm still sad too.
I'm also Anthony. I'm sad, Anthony.
And we'll see you guys next week.